Welcome back to the Clear Voice podcast. This week, I am suffering from a cold. Excellent. We all know that winter feeling, don't we? With a lurgy just creeps up on you. Well, luckily, when we were recording, I wasn't suffering. So you'll only have to suffer with my nasal tones for the first and last parts of this episode. But anyway, this week, I spoke to Anna Lapwood, who is a conductor, educator, organist, and broadcaster for the BBC. She runs the women's choirs at Pembroke College, Cambridge University. She is the youngest and one of only two female directors of music there. She raised a really good point during this episode about calling women women rather than girls and how that empowers us to hold space for ourselves and the women around us. We also discuss how to trailblaze and when not to listen to criticism. Let's get into it. So, hello, Anna. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a bit of a mad day, but it's nice to be here. Didn't die on the way, as my taxi driver told me I would.
Always a bonus when you don't die on your journey. So, you are a conductor, organist, educator, many, many things, and all in music.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you're a singer as well.
Oh, gosh. I don't think I would nail my flag to that mast necessarily. I have sung. Mm-hmm. I love singing in choirs and I've done it sort of periodically. And I think it's a really helpful thing to be able to sing as a conductor so that you can demonstrate how you want things to sound. Although as you can probably hear, my speaking voice is now quite sort of tenorial. Technically, I'm a soprano, but I can sort of now sing tenor as well from working with so many men in choirs,
wow.
I think.
And what is your relationship with your voice, like your speaking voice, your singing voice? What's it like?
It's something that I've thought about a lot, actually, in the past sort of 3 or 4 years, because when I went to university, I was the organ scholar at Magdalen College. So I was working with an all-male choir. So they had boys on the front row, age 7 to 13, and then altos, tenors and basses were all men. And when I turned up, I had quite a high-pitched voice, and it wasn't a conscious thing at all, but I just gradually realised over the course of 3 years that it had dropped down quite drastically to where it is now. And it's only when I laugh, I think, if I get overexcited or I laugh, my voice goes back to where it used to be. But now my voice is permanently down here. And that's something that I found has been really useful as a conductor. I have found that singers sometimes, just to make a point, we'll sort of say, sorry, I can't understand what you're saying because it's too high-pitched, which is ridiculous.
Wow, that is ridiculous.
It's, yeah.
Higher pitches travel faster, you hear them
better. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it works, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's also, with the radio work I do, it definitely comes into it as well. So again, when I started my show that I present last year, it was basically 12 months ago, my voice was higher. Even from where it is now. And just as I started to relax into the show and what it was to be a presenter and to sit there, it naturally comes down. So every now and then my friends are like, do your radio voice. And it does drop even further than it is as my normal sort of speaking voice.
Are we hearing your radio voice now?
No, this is my normal voice.
Okay, so it could go lower.
It does go lower, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe we'll hear it later on.
Well, we'll see.
So going back to your job, no, scholarship?
Organ scholarship.
Organ scholarship.
Yeah.
Not a job, but you're conducting things. Could you explain a little bit more?
Yeah. So there's this weird phenomenon in the Oxbridge choral world, which is the organ scholar. So essentially, it's people who turn up as normal students, mm-hmm. but they have already reached a high standard on the organ. And so they are not employed, but they are brought in to accompany the choir. So they vary in their kind of intensity. So in some places, you might play for one service a week and that's sort of it. Some places you do all the conducting. So you're basically a director of music, but you're not given that title. And then in the case of Magdalen, it was doing 8 services a week, every week of the year,
wow.
Of the academic year. And then also rehearsing the choristers, the little choristers, at 7:50 every morning. So that was basically a full-time job on top of a degree. And you get £200 a year for it. It's great. No, I'm joking. It was the most amazing experience I've ever done. And I'm so glad I did it. I learned so much. It was, I always say, at once the best and worst time of my life, in that I had to learn who I was all over again, which was quite a weird thing. It's the classic thing that everyone talks about when they go to university. You're the best at school. And then you go into a world where you don't know what you're doing. And that was really tough. But I enjoyed it.
How did you find, because Magdalen is... The choir is all male.
Yeah.
Am I correct? Yeah. And had there ever been any females there?
No, I was the first woman organ scholar. So,
and how was that? What did you find any challenges in asserting authority?
It was interesting. I mean, by the end, I had an amazing support network around me and some of my closest friends. At the beginning, it was really hard because I think the gents just sort of didn't quite know how to treat me. They didn't know whether they should sort of think of me as a sister or as someone they wanted to go out with or all of this stuff. And so there was this constant kind of jostling around. And I remember sort of not being allowed into the Clark room, but I needed to put all the music into their pigeonholes.
So why weren't you allowed in there?
Because it's an all male. Like they just said, sorry, but it's guys only in here.
Are they getting changed?
Just putting their cassocks on. So it's not...
So there's no nudity?
No. It's just... And I think it was almost a joke, but then I meant I couldn't put the music in their pigeonholes and things like that. So at the beginning, I had that sort of thing to deal with, and that was a bit weird. But by the end, they got used to it.
Good.
I made them get used to
it. And I suppose it's easier once you've been there for a while and you have people who are then coming into the choir and you're established, you're not someone new appearing.
Yeah, you have when it builds up over time, and when it becomes a normal thing for the first years to see that there is a woman there as well. But also interestingly, when I was there, I was very much encouraged not to make a thing of my gender at all. So I mean I had very short hair at the time. I always wore kind of trousers and jackets. I wore dresses very occasionally. When I did, people would make comments, and so that would put me off. For example, I would never wear a dress to conduct. And I actually wrote a really interesting essay when I then came to Cambridge about the idea of conducting as drag in a way, because I think for a female conductor, it's you're pretending to be a man almost. You lower the voice, you wear male clothes. And it was quite an interesting angle to explore. So it was an interesting time.
And how do you feel about this conducting in drag? And do you think that we will see a time when you can be a female and be feminine and conduct? Because I ask this because I literally this weekend saw a man conduct in the most feminine way.
Really?
But if a woman was on stage doing the same thing, they would be absolutely laughed out of town.
It's a really interesting point. I think, who was it who said, I think it might have been Maren Allsop who said that if I do a certain action, I'll be described as girly. If a man does it, he'll be sensitive. And I think that's a really interesting point. I hope that we'll get to a point where women are sort of seen as conductors without those problems. I mean, there's something really interesting at the proms. I can't remember which female conductor it was, but she was conducting and she was wearing a kind of kimono, and all of the reviews focused on what she was wearing as opposed to they said, oh, it detracted from the conducting, all of this stuff. I'm surprised the orchestra could even see her hands, blah, blah, blah. It was absolutely outrageous. And I think there is this tendency of reviewers and audience members to think, oh, it's a woman, oh, what's she wearing? And that's a weird thing, but at the same time it's something that I'm so conscious of. I mean, when I went for the Pembroke job and where I am now, and I was preparing for the interview, I mentioned in passing to my director of music, I said, oh gosh, yeah, no, I've been out and bought a new suit, I just want to make sure I'm wearing the right thing. And he said, oh, of course you've bought a new suit, most people would go and sit and prepare the scores, but you bought a new suit. And because for them, they just put on a suit, that's it, because that's their outfit every day. But for me, I'm so overly aware of the way that I am seen, because everything is working, or felt like it was working against you. And so you just want to come in and do the best you can and not be detracting in any way from your conducting.
Absolutely. And it's just so difficult. And also, so I saw, I think it was a tweet, I can't remember, very recently of you. Someone had asked you if you were there to audition for the choir that you run.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason I ask is because you are, you're young, in inverted commas, and it must be difficult. How do you assert yourself in that way? Being like, I know, I look feminine and I look young. What do you do?
It's funny you ask this week. I think I've now had 11 times this week I've been asked if I'm a fresher.
11.
I think it's particularly bad because we're in Freshers Week at the moment. So there are a lot of new people in college, new faces in college. So a lot of the freshers have asked me if I'm a fresher. And a couple of sort of porters in different colleges. So I've learned to kind of laugh it off. But it is difficult in the choir context. I think when I first turned up at Pembroke, sort of tried to be friends with the choir, which was the wrong thing to do, because it would have been my natural friendship group. Were I a student, obviously my friends would be in the choir.
So when you came to Pembroke, you are director of
music.
I'm director
of music, yeah.
And the people in the choir are 18?
So they're undergraduates and graduates. The oldest is 26, I think.
Okay.
So older than me, still. And when I turned up, I must have been 21.
Were you the youngest ever director of music at Cambridge College?
In Oxbridge,
College?
Yeah. Oxbridge. And still am. I probably still will be for another 10 years, I think. Yeah. It's not going to change anytime soon. So then when I started the job and I realised that wasn't going to work, just because it's really hard to gain respect in that way in a director of music role when you have your gender and age working against you, in inverted commas. So I then went in the kind of opposite direction and went really, really fierce. And that also doesn't work. And I think I'm only really now finding a bit of a happy medium where you're firm, but consistently firm, and then give bits of friendship where they've been earned. That sounds really clinical, but you have to think about it that much. It's a bit of a weird world to be in.
It is. I think it is difficult trying to find that authority, and especially also being a woman.
Yeah.
As you say before, in the way that men can be kind and it's sensitive, and women are just girly.
Yeah.
In the same way that if a woman is firm, she potentially is labelled as a bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
But a man is just assertive, you know, and I think it is hard for us to find that in a way that is acceptable for the world around us.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting thing I found, because we've set up this girls' choir at Pembroke, so it's for, I should say, women aged 11 to 18. And the reason I changed it to women is because it's something that has been a big thing in my mind in the last year since setting it up. I've suddenly become more aware of the fact that when people refer to me as a girl, I get really annoyed.
Absolutely.
And I never used to. Because I got it all the time when I was an undergraduate. And it wouldn't even bother me because we were girls at school, and so it's not that weird. But then when you're actually working and you're a professional and someone says, oh, girls, that really riles me. And I hadn't even realised that I was actually referring to the undergraduates in the choir and the graduates in the choir as girls, because I'd been in a choir situation where you were talking about boys and men, so I would talk about girls and men.
Yeah.
And so I then have made this really conscious effort to change that. Every time I use it, I change it to, I have to still be conscious of it at the moment, but it's either ladies or women and gents, and it just makes it easier. But then there's this really interesting thing with the girls' choir, because they are girls, in inverted commas, they are 11 to 18, but I've actually made that same conscious decision with them. So I also refer to them as ladies and women. I never refer to them as girls, or I try not to anymore. Because I think that if you treat them as adults, they will act like adults and they will give you the professionalism that you expect. If you treat them like children, then they will behave like children. And I think it's so interesting the difference that one word can make.
That's really interesting. Yeah, absolutely. And continuing with your voice, in your line of work, when we've already covered so many potential things where you need to speak out and speak up against injustices, are there any times when you've really had to speak out and you feel like you have spoken out and you've made a difference?
Yeah, I think the big debate that's always raging in the choral world is the one about boy and girl choristers, or male and female choristers, I should probably say.
There we go, yeah.
it's really hard to get out the habit of doing it. Male and female choristers. I guess in a way it helps to say boy and girl to clarify that we're talking about children in this situation. There's this raging debate about the fact that all the opportunities historically have gone to the boys, and that it's now moving in the other direction, well, not in the other direction, but we're getting more opportunities for women to sing as well.
And just to clarify here, opportunities sometimes mean, and actually quite a lot of the time mean, scholarships to study at private schools that they would not normally be able to afford it. And these huge opportunities for how many boys in a choir? Sorry,
probably on average.
But these are boys.
These are boys.
These are little boys.
I think let's just, this is going to get,
these are
take hours.
Male children in a choir.
Male children, males. So you're probably looking at 18 choristers in any one choir.
18 choristers in any one choir. There are many choirs in the country. We're looking at hundreds of boys who are having huge, amazing educational opportunities, which is great. However, there's a huge privilege gap here.
There is, historically. But what's really interesting about this argument is that everyone expects me to be on the, yes, more girls choirs, we need girls at King's, all of this. They expect me to fight that. And it's actually the not the opposite of what I think, but I feel so passionately about the fact that we need to preserve some boys' choirs, because I think gendered spaces are really important as a general rule. And I think we would probably agree on that. If you look at sort of girls' schools, things like that, they are really important. But also singing is a gendered activity in that there is the difference. A boy will have his boy voice and then it will break. And then he'll have to rediscover a new voice as he goes through puberty and all of this. So I have fought quite aggressively in various different ways to try and make people understand that, because I think a lot of people go into that argument in a very black and white way and say, well, we need equality, so therefore we just split all the choirs, that's fine, we'll have girls at King's and boys at King's. The reality of that would be, I think, devastating, in my opinion. And so I actually wrote an article about it. And I have never had such a good and bad day on Twitter because I, on the one hand, I had all of these really aggressive comments from various people who just really were failing to understand it at all and saying, well, actually what we need is to have adult sopranos in their plays instead. And just think, okay, you're really missing the point here. That's a separate argument. But then I, on the other hand, I got loads of private messages of support from other directors of music and conductors who all said, thank you for saying what we can't say, because if we said it, we'd be accused of being a misogynist. It's you who's saying it. So therefore you kind of can. So that's a time that I've really had to kind of stand up and pin my flag to the mast.
I guess. And interesting the point of your voice carrying more weight in that situation.
Yeah.
Because you are a woman.
Yeah. It's rare that that is
it the is case. Rare. Interesting. And then so to flip it, are there any times when you've really struggled to speak out, or you had a situation you're like, and you know, I think we all do it, day later or even on the way home, you're like, oh, wish I'd said that, and you really had that moment.
Yeah, I think it's sort of that. The thing that has always stuck out, the one experience that's always stuck out for me, I was at a dinner talking with other directors of music about a new role that was being created in a college, and they were sort of asking what sort of thing would we like to see in that role, what would we like the director of music to do. And I tend to sit quite quiet in those meetings because I'm very aware that actually I've still, well, particularly at that stage, I've got a lot to learn. I can learn so much from listening to people. And then I only choose to say something if I really think it's kind of worth saying. So I sat there for about an hour and didn't really say anything.
And the rest of the people in the room, how many are there? Men, women?
15, one other woman.
And older, younger?
So all the rest of the directors of music. Okay. So I just said, well, there's this one thing that we do at Pembroke that I think could be really helpful here, which involves the fact that the organ scholars at Pembroke are allowed to conduct one service a week without me being there. They have total autonomy over it. They run a consort. They choose the music because I think they need to make their mistakes without me hovering over them. So I made that comment, and someone else in the room just said, well, you clearly would have never survived a proper organ scholarship under someone like me, and not realizing where I'd been an organ scholar. And I remember just sitting there like...
So for context, Maudlin is like one of the choirs. Yeah.
It's known as one of the most sort of... So it's Maudlin, Christchurch, New College, King's, John's are the five. And it's one of those five. And he'd clearly assumed that because, I don't know, for whatever reason, possibly to do a gender, that I had been in some college where you do one service a week and that's it. And so I took great pleasure at the end of this dinner. He sort of came up and said, oh, I hope I didn't ruffle your feathers too much. Because at that point, I just sat and didn't say anything for the rest of the evening. He said, I hope I didn't ruffle your feathers too much. And I said, oh, no, well, I'm actually, when I was an organ scholar at Magdalen College, Oxford, and his face just totally turned. And he was like, But that's one of those where I wish I'd stood up for myself at the time instead of waiting till afterwards and just getting really annoyed about it in my head.
So what would you have done differently, and what would you say, because that's such a common situation. Like, I can think of right now, I can think of like two or three times when that's happened to me, pretty much not word for word,
yeah,
but exactly the same. And I think it's such a common thing for everyone. What would you suggest to do?
I think I just wish I had had the confidence to turn to him and say, as a direct response, well, actually, I was in a proper organ scholarship. And firstly, what is a proper organ scholarship? But actually, yeah. I was in, this is where I was organ scholar, and I still think it's a valid thing, despite your comment.
And what do you think stopped you doing it in that moment?
the fact that you're in a room full of people older than you who you feel have more respect, more validity, whatever that means, and you don't want to... I find myself saying so often, oh, I just want to do my job and do it well and not ruffle too many feathers. And I think it's only in the last year or so that I've been like, you know what, some feathers do need ruffling.
Absolutely.
If we're going to change things. And I think someone just said to me recently, they're like, what's it like always having to go against the grain? And I'm like, blimmin' exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like realistically, things won't change if you just sit there quietly and get on with it.
Absolutely. Talking about how you've sort of come on your journey of gaining respect in different choirs, in different situations, and now I'm one of the oldest institutions on earth, potentially. Is that right? I don't know. We'll go with
that. Yes, let's say that's right.
Exactly. That's quite a big journey.
Mm.
How have you found your voice in that and found your authority?
Trial and error, I think. And also, I think I've had to learn to not always take advice, which is a really difficult thing. Some of my closest colleagues and friends have advised me not to do things that I'm now doing and loving because they've said, oh, it's a bad decision. And it just actually, when you're trailblazing in inverted commas, people are going to tell you you're making the wrong decision because it's not a path that's been kind of explored before. So, for example, I had a meeting about 6 months ago where someone basically turned around, someone I again that I respect, turned around to me and said, you know what? What do you want to do in your life? And I said, well, I'm not entirely sure at this moment in time. I don't necessarily have a 10-year plan. And they said, yeah, it's becoming really obvious. And they said, they were like, no one knows who you are. No one knows what you want with your life. Everyone knows that you're just like grabbing at any straw that comes your way, all of this stuff. And I was sitting there like, oh my God, I've made all the wrong choices. And you start to doubt yourself massively. And then I went to my flat and obviously had a little cry. And then I was like, hang on a minute. That's just not true. Like, I know that these people know me for this reason. And I also know that I'm making a name for myself in a variety of fields that tie together. And that makes me the hopefully broad person that I am. But that's what makes me different. And trying to trailblaze and then ignore all that advice is really difficult because you think, well, they're older and wiser. But actually, you have to just like say, no, I know what I want to do. And I know this is the right choice. That's hard.
Yeah. Very hard. And knowing when to make that decision, because then there's always that other voice which is like, no, but what if this is the time that I should listen?
Yeah, it's really difficult.
That's really good advice. Really good advice. And is there anyone who you really admire for speaking out and campaigning? Any trailblazing women?
This is a really hard question because the thing is... I think the challenge with what I'm doing is that there are kind of no obvious people who have done exactly what I'm doing before me. So there's no sort of, if I were just a conductor, I would say Maren Alsop. If I were just a broadcaster, I would say, I don't know, Clemency Burson Hill. But because there's no one doing this kind of organist, I'd say Gillian Weir. But it feels like there's sort of no one who's done what I'm trying to do. And so it's almost like there's no one woman. It's just watching women who are doing amazing things and completely kicking ass. And I'm like, yeah, you're great.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I live my life. And yeah, so I think that's why I'm struggling to say, oh, yes, no, well, obviously this person inspires me. I think I just, yeah. But all, and sorry, I'm flitting around a little bit. But I think that weirdly, the people who I feel most inspired by most regularly are the girl choristers that I work with, because they aren't trying to inspire. They're not trying to do anything. They're just getting on with life, but doing it really, really, really well. They're turning up after busy days at school, sometimes not in a great kind of mental state. And then they start singing and they just focus on that. And the older ones help the younger ones. And now the ones who were our youngest are helping the ones who are now even younger. Aww. And that kind of thing. I think that's the thing that I would say is my biggest kind of inspiration, even though it's probably not quite what you're looking for.
No, that is exactly what we're looking for.
Oh, brilliant.
And lastly, how, in a nutshell, how are you using your voice for change? What are you fighting for?
I'm fighting for a number of things. I think I'm fighting for gender equality that is not reductionist, if I were to summarize it in one sentence. So I feel very strongly that if we're going to make things equal, it should be by adding opportunities, not diluting existing ones. I'm fighting for people to realise that the organ is actually a really cool instrument because no one seems to think it is. As I get on like an almost daily basis where they're like, you don't look like an organist. And I'm like, well, what does an organist look like?
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean?
And I think I'm just, I'm fighting for other people to be able to do what I'm doing in 50 years time and it not to be different, not to be weird and different, to be a female conductor, to be an organist, to want to do more than one thing as your specialism. I think I'm just trying to create a role model for the next generation of people, I guess.
Amazing. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Clear Voice podcast. We're taking a half-term break, so we'll see you in 2 weeks for more amazing women talking about how they found their voices and use them for change. And don't forget to share this podcast with anyone who stands to gain from the wisdom shared by these wonderful and inspiring women. Ooh.